Good evening, Jill. Welcome to the Space Show.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
What is SETI?
SETI is an attempt to detect evidence of extraterrestrial technologies by listening, in our case, for radio signals that may be transmitted by a distant technology.
And it was originally funded by NASA, wasn't it? That sort of a large project to look for these signals from outer space, but they cancelled it. Why?
Well, it wasn't cancelled by NASA. It was cancelled by the United States Congress, who gives NASA their funding. And it was in particular cancelled by one senator from Nevada who didn't think the program had a very high priority. And unfortunately, not too many people in the Congress actually knew about us, and it was very easy to laugh at this search for little green men, ha, ha, ha. And it was terminated by the Congress.
So where did you go from there? I mean, you just didn't throw up your arms and holler and say, oh, all's lost, what happened?
Well, we had a little rough time, and we reorganized ourselves and shook off the dust, and we went to private individuals of great wealth and with great vision, and we've been successful in raising enough funds to keep going. Our goal right now is to try and establish a large endowment on the order of $100 million U.S. in order to keep this sort of research going far into the future, as long as may be necessary.
And you came to Australia as part of this project. Why did you come to Australia?
Well, our first observing, actually, as Project Phoenix, after we arose from the ashes of congressional termination, the first observing was done in Australia, and that's because we have targets scattered all over the sky, and you see the southern half, ideally. So we came here and used two telescopes, one at Parkes in New South Wales, the other north in Coonabarabran. We used the two telescopes cooperatively together to try and eliminate many signals that are due to our own technology.
Things like cars driving past?
Well, more like satellites or airplanes going overhead, or mobile cellular telephones or microwave ovens, that kind of thing.
And what happened? Did you get any signals?
Well, we did get a number of signals. Not an overwhelming number. The use of the two telescopes, which was the first time we had ever done that, proved very, very efficient in filtering out our own interference. And in the end, out of more than 25,000 different observations of different stars at different frequencies, we only had 39 signals that caused us to stop the observing, move the telescopes off source, and go track down the signal. These were 39 potentially interesting candidates, and we got excited about each of them, but in the end, they all turned out to be our own terrestrial technology.
So you weren't able to say, hey, folks, we found it?
No, we couldn't say we found it. That's the bad news. On the other hand, the good news is that there were no mysteries, nothing left unexplained. This idea of using two telescopes works very well and allows us, in real time, when we think we have something, to go chasing after it.
And that's the important thing, isn't it, real time, that you can actually lock onto a signal straight away without having to say a couple of weeks later when you're analyzing the data, hey, there was something there, let's go back, look for it, and it's gone.
That's right. We need to be able to confirm and verify the signal, and if at all possible, get someone else in the world to give us an independent verification that they can see it too.
So having drawn a blank here in Australia, you packed away your crates, put them back on a ship, and where did you go?
Well, after we left Australia, we spent about 2 years at telescopes at West Virginia and Georgia in the United States, on the east coast of our country. A 140-foot telescope at the National Radio Astronomy Observatory and a 30-meter telescope at Woodbury, Georgia, that the students and faculty at Georgia Tech helped us to rebuild from an AT&T ground station. So, again, when we were in Australia, we looked at a couple of hundred stars. We did the same sort of thing, northern stars from West Virginia and Georgia. And right now, we've just moved the equipment to the largest telescope in the world, to Arecibo in Puerto Rico. And prior to the hurricane that came through last week, we were observing at Puerto Rico with a second telescope at Jodrell Bank in England, again doing this interferometer. And the observations were going well until the wind picked up and we were off the telescope, and we won't be back there again until March. But every 6 months now for the next few years, we'll have an observing campaign between these two telescopes.
And no signals yet?
Well, not yet. If we had found something, you'd certainly hear about it, because that's our intention, to tell the world.
Was the recent discovery of more planets going around other stellar systems? Obviously, we can't see these stars, but is this giving you hope that the search might eventually be successful?
Well, for years, our theorists have been telling us that when stars like the Sun form, planets will be the rule rather than the exception. And to a degree, we've begun to prove that and verify that. The planets that we found so far are not exactly what we expected. We didn't expect to find large super-Jupiter planets tucked up close to their stars. So there's more variety in the way that solar systems formed than we might have believed in the first place. But planetary systems do form, and that does make it more probable that there will be habitats for other creatures.
What directions do you see the search for extraterrestrial intelligence taking in the near future?
Well, in the radio search, we will try and use or build larger and larger collecting area so that we can listen for fainter signals, and we'll need to increase our target list from 1,000 to 100,000 or 1,000,000 perhaps before we succeed. Other directions that are being enabled by new technologies will be searches for very rapid optical pulses, something that lasts only a microsecond or a nanosecond. Now, at optical frequencies, extraterrestrial transmitter will have to outshine its star to be detectable by us, because we can't separate the planet from the star. But they don't have to outshine their star all the time. If they do it for a very brief moment, and we have good enough photon detectors with fast enough time registration that we can capture that burst of optical photons over a very short period of time, then it is a detectable signal. So that's something that we'll be looking at in the future. We'll also be considering the ramifications of small, tiny nanoprobes, things that might have been sent by a distant technology and that might currently be in our solar system. We haven't come up with any effective ways to make searches systematically for such things, but we're beginning to think about it more seriously.
Like most people, I've seen the film Contact. Most of our listeners will have seen it as well. What did you think of the film?
I thought Contact was brilliant. I really enjoyed it. It was the first time I've seen a film where scientists are treated really as human beings, with all of our warts and idiosyncrasies and our passions and obsessions, but we're not kind of queer, white, lab-coated people out to destroy or save the world or something. And we were just individuals working very hard on something that we believe is worthwhile.
The character that Jodie Foster played was said to be loosely based on yourself. How do you feel about that?
Well, certainly Jodie Foster played the role of a woman who does what I do, and she did it very, very well.
How did your interest in SETI start?
I got started working on SETI when I was a graduate student at UC Berkeley, and a professor, an X-ray astronomer, Stuart Boyer, had a very clever idea for using the university's radio telescope at Hat Creek in a way that allowed him to piggyback on traditional radio astronomical observations and do SETI at the same time. And I simply knew how to program an old ancient computer he was given as a bit of cast-off equipment, and I was the only one around who still remembered how to program it. So he came to me, and I got interested in the idea.
You mentioned that the Congress canceled the program, the original NASA-funded search, because of ignorance. Have you arranged a special congressional showing of the film Contact for them?
That actually is a great idea. I think that it's still politically incorrect to try and put SETI back into NASA, but the time will come.
Yeah. Do you have a sort of a timeline you're working towards?
No, it's politics, and politics will determine its own timeline. We'll just try and be ready.
So it's just out of your hands, as it were.
That's right. That's right. I'd rather work with telescopes than politicians any day.
Okay, Jill. Well, thank you very much for joining us tonight on The Space Show.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thanks for inviting me.